Mechanicsville? I can never. It's sort of between both.
Is the development in Mechanicsville is the post office.
It's the post office, okay. Yeah. Mechanicsville, Maryland, interviewing Mrs. Madeline Mary Barry Henderson on July 14th, 1997. Mrs. Henderson, I have that you were born in 1922 in Merrimack, Massachusetts.
Right.
Tell me about your family background, parents.
Okay. My father was a naval architect. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we're doing fine.
And my mother was a homemaker. My father was born and brought up in Merrimack, and I was born there, I suspect because I came a little early during a family visit to Merrimack. But our home was in Quincy, Massachusetts. My father was a marine draftsman or naval architect at the Bethlehem Shipbuilding Company for River Yard in Quincy. I grew up there.
Now, where had your father been educated?
At Webb Institute of Naval Architecture in New York City, up near, it's a preeminent school of naval architecture. He had, it's near Fordham University, up in that part. And my mother was a registered nurse in New York City. I don't know how much of this personal history you want, but my father was a born and bred New Englander. His family, I think, came over on the Mayflower. My mother was probably a second or third generation Irish-American in New York, and they met and fell in love. And my father told his family that he wanted to marry this Irish girl from, this Catholic Irish girl from New York, and they wanted to know why he didn't marry an American. But we had a loving family on all the generations. My grandfather lived until he was in his 90s. My grandmother died relatively young, but my father converted to Catholicism out of convictions as much as love for his bride. And we were all brought up Roman Catholic. There were four of us. I was the third child. I have an older brother and an older sister and a younger brother, all of whom are gone now. And their spouses are gone now. So we have, I have nieces and nephews, but I'm the last of that family. I grew up in Quincy. I went to the public schools through the eighth grade, and then I transferred to a private school for girls, Woodward School for Girls.
Was this a Catholic school?
No, it was established by a Dr. Ebenezer Woodward for the education of young women born in Quincy. And they extended the born in to include daughters of residents of Quincy in case a woman went to a hospital in Boston or Braintree or someplace and like me, Merrimack. But it was a small school, college preparatory courses. I took Latin for 4 years and science and English and French and so forth. A very nice school and a very good education. From there, I went to Emmanuel College in Boston, which is a Catholic school. All girls and a day school at that time. I commuted from Quincy into Boston. This was during the war, so that in order to be able to commute, I drove fellow students. I had a carpool, and you could get gasoline rationing coupons for that kind of activity. my father being a war worker, really, at the shipyard, of course, had access to gasoline. Let me back up a minute and tell you that during the Depression years, the shipyard established a program of part-time work, shared work, I guess you'd call it now, part-time work. My father worked 3 days a week, 1 week, and 2 days a week the next week, and his counterpart did the opposite. So that we felt the Depression, but were never battered by it, you know.
Now, he was a government employee, or?
No, Bethlehem Steel built ships for the Navy, but they also built, what do you call them, commercial merchant ships, I think probably freighters, and I remember they did a cruise liner one time. We got to, as children of family of employees, we could get to walk through the ships when they were first launched, you know, and so I can remember that. I was very impressed with it was the Matson line, M-A-T-S-O-N, Matson line, and I think that it was scheduled to sail from California to Hawaii or something like that. So that was pretty exotic.
Then you went to Emmanuel College on a scholarship?
No, I didn't. I applied for scholarships. I got a partial scholarship, but it was a day school, and my father said at the time, I remember, we can't afford to send you away, you know, to live at college. So start out at Emmanuel, and over time we'll see if you can't transfer. And of course, very few months at Emmanuel, I was completely enamored of that place, and I wouldn't want to transfer, so I went all 4 years. Now Emmanuel does have dorms, and it does have residence halls, and every student has a computer in her room. times they do change, don't they?
How did you choose chemistry?
I decided, and I'm going to show you something. I decided when I was in the eighth grade that I wanted to be a chemist. One of our assignments was to write a book on my chosen career, and I did that. I went to the local hospital and interviewed a lab technician there, and I did research on salary ranges and education requirements and so forth. Eighth grade.
This is a publication dated 1936.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
That was my career book that Mrs. Henderson did on being a chemist.
And
so you decided chemistry was for
chemistry
you.
Chemistry was for me in the eighth grade. And when I went to Woodward School, I had a very good science teacher who told me to consider industrial chemistry as opposed to hospital chemistry as a career choice. So when I went to Emmanuel, I majored chemistry and minored mathematics. All of my other colleagues who majored in chemistry minored biology and did go into healthcare work and hospital work and clinic work and so forth. But I, in my senior year, our placement bureau arranged interviews for graduating seniors, and I interviewed with the DuPont Company. And I came down to New Jersey and worked for the DuPont Company Explosives Research Lab during the Second World War. I graduated in 1944 from Emmanuel, June 6th, 1944. I said we were knocked off the front page by
yes,
D-Day.
You were. Right.
I came down to New Jersey. That was my first experience living away from home, and I was pretty homesick for a while. I came down to New Jersey the end of June, and I went home for Labor Day, and after that, I never was homesick again. I don't know, to get back home and see that everything was surviving in spite of my absence, it was quite an experience.
Now you were at DuPont for about a year?
For 1 year, uh-huh. Yes.
Working in explosives.
In the explosives research, we were in the analytical research lab.
Uh-huh.
We did analyses on research uh-huh. compounds. Uh-huh. I remember one of them was caprolactam, which was an ingredient of nylon.
Right.
And we also did research on analytical techniques. We helped to develop analytical techniques
mm-hmm.
to match the needs of the research chemists who were doing explosives work. It was a very interesting assignment. I tell you one thing I learned there. We had to account for our time, since the analytical lab did work for the research labs. We had to account for our time each day in 15-minute increments. And it taught you to be very efficient and also very industrious.
Hmm.
You couldn't...
Now this was for cost accounting purposes?
Yes,
yeah.
Yes. Uh-huh. The analytical lab charged the research lab so much money. We were, the director of the analytical lab allowed a certain amount of time for professional growth, you know, reading
mm-hmm.
journals and of course for staff meetings and so forth,
mm-hmm.
but having to account for your time like that was a very good lesson,
Yeah. You didn't happen to know Dale Baker when... Because you were there about the same time, I think.
Was he in DuPont?
He was in New Jersey at DuPont.
Uh-huh.
Doing explosives. And back when I interviewed him, he talked about having a couple of blow-ups and still has glass or something in his
for
chest.
For goodness sake. For goodness. No, I didn't know Dale there. I must ask him sometime if he was in Gibbstown.
Huh. Yeah, I'm not sure what town it was in.
Huh.
And you stayed there for that until 45 then?
Yes,
right?
1 year. And I got a letter from the placement bureau at Emanuel saying that if I were interested, there was a small lab in Quincy that needed needed a chemist, a junior chemist.
Mm-hmm.
And I decided that I was ready to go home, so I did, and I went to work for another year, one more year, at this, it was called the Harrington Labs. It was established by a man named Valentine, I think his name was, Valentine Harrington, and he was sponsored by a local company that thought they wanted to get into the household chemicals business, cleaners, shampoos,
mm-hmm.
And so forth. And I can remember Harrington had worked in a lab in Cambridge, and he and his chief assistant decided to take a flyer on this, starting up their own business and found the sponsor in this local businessman who thought that household chemicals was a good place to try. And I can remember the three of us in this big warehouse, kind of a laboratory. Used to wash our hair every day to try the different formulations of shampoo, you know, and then we'd go around pulling our hair to see if it squeaked. Oh, that lasted about a year, and then it was much too difficult and expensive to break into the market. So the Harrington and Company, the Harrington Research Labs dissolved. They went back to wherever they had been. I think, seems to me, they had been in a lab in Cambridge that did shoe polish, maybe. Or maybe it was even Gillette with the shaving cream. But and I, in the meantime, had had a call from a friend, a classmate from Emmanuel, who worked at MIT. She had been a math major and was working in a lab at MIT, and said that she understood they were advertising for a chemist. And why didn't I come out and look at that? Which I did. So far, I was always landing on my feet. And I got a job at MIT working in the chemical engineering department under Warren K. Lewis, who has been called the father of chemical engineering. He had a grant from what was then Esso, now Exxon, Esso, supporting his graduate students in studying catalytic cracking techniques, particularly fluidized beds. And the graduate student, the chemical engineering graduate students, could use the services of a chemist and a mathematician to analyze the results of their runs in these fluidized columns and to calculate their results also. So I enjoyed that very much. We were in a called the High Pressure Research Lab at MIT, which was an old building right next to the power plant. I suppose they figured if we blew up, we wouldn't hurt anybody. And I stayed there 3.5 years, and then 1949, I guess it was, by that time.
Well, now, excuse me, you took some courses also at MIT while you were there in chemical engineering.
Yes, chemical engineering and physical chemistry, which was a blossoming subject then. Mm-hmm. When I was at Emmanuel, in my senior year, they offered an introductory course to physical chemistry, but it conflicted with my math courses, so I couldn't take it, and I took it at MIT. And
you were not headed for a degree there, or
no? No, and it was difficult because I would have to leave work and run across the campus and sit in the class for about an hour and then run back. And the teacher, who was a pioneer in physical chemistry, had short shrift for women. This was in the days when MIT was definitely a men's college, you know. Mm-hmm. And very few women students, and certainly none who come running in breathless. And so it was instructive, but it didn't inspire me to go on to a graduate work at that time.
Well, now, was work in the lab an all male world except for you?
Yes. The high pressure research lab had two machinists helping the young graduate students build their fluidized bed reactors, and me there. So it was both fun, and but I had several friends working there who had graduated from Emanuel, so I would meet them for lunch. Yeah. And we also had access to the dinghies on the Charles, so we'd go sailing at noontime and that sort of thing. So we enjoyed it. Hmm.
Three and a half years.
And then I had a letter, and I've got it in my files here, from Dr. Lewis saying that he had to cut back, and he would give me 3 months' notice and give me any kind of help he could in finding another job, and recommendations and all that sort of thing. This was in 1949, and it was a semi-recession, you know, a small period of cutback after the war was over and before the country. Mm-hmm. And for the first time, I had to go job hunting. And it was difficult, a difficult time to do it, because there were few jobs and there were many candidates for every job. I ended up accepting a job in Peter Bent Brigham Hospital Surgical Research Lab, and I lasted a month, about a month. And I can remember my sister. I was terribly upset about being out of work and not being able to find a job easily. And I remember my sister said to me, "You're driving around in a new car, you've got money, you know, you're living at home, what are you worried about?" But it just didn't seem right not to be working. So I went to Peter Bent Brigham, and I won't be able to remember his name, but he was a pioneer in metabolic research work. And I was there about a month, and I got a call from MIT saying that Professor Perry wanted an assistant. Would I like to come and talk to him? And I did. I guess I worked at Peter Bent the month of December and talked to Perry in January, and he said start the 1st of February.
This is 1950.
Uh-huh. And I went over to MIT and I met Perry. I have an item in my bibliography which you might have seen. This
you described that.
This was something called, I think, Scientific Information Notes, and I don't know whether it still exists.
Yeah,
but
I found it.
Okay.
It was in your bibliography.
Yeah,
right.
They did these personality profiles every once in a while, and I did one on Perry.
Right.
And I can remember that he, when he said, "Well, do you want to try it?" And I said, "Yes, I think so." I had one friend who had graduated from Emanuel the year after I did, with a major in biology, who got a master's in biology and then moved to Washington and went to work in the Chemical Biological Coordination Center.
Mm-hmm.
And I said to her, "What kind of work is that?" That's, you know, up till that time I'd been a bench chemist, and I didn't believe that you were a scientist if you didn't work in the laboratory. And she told me it was very interesting and very important and so forth. So when Perry said, "This is the kind of work I'm doing," if you read that Scientific Information Notes profile, he had been a bench chemist and then had been steered into information work. And
I don't know much about Perry's background prior to the project. What I had was, in 1945, he was a library fellow at MIT studying problems of
uh-huh.
documentation. Do you know what happened before then?
He had gotten a bachelor's in chemistry from North Carolina State.
Right. Uh-huh.
And in 31, a master's in science from chemical engineering, as a matter of fact, from MIT.
Right.
And then he spent a year at the Technische Hochschule in Germany. And then he returned to the United States and went to work at the National Anilin Division of Allied Chemical in Buffalo, New York in 1934. And he was there until the war years, and then he went to, I guess, to Aberdeen Proving Ground here, the Ballistics Research Labs, and he was there, the Army's Ballistic Research Lab. And then he went back to MIT, and when I met him, he had a laboratory or an office tucked away in the Research Lab of Electronics building.
Mm-hmm. But what I wondered was how he got this job as library fellow in 45.
I don't know.
You don't know how he got into the documentation?
I know that he got into documentation because from his experience at Allied, where he came to recognize the importance of the literature and information for chemical probably any research, but in his case, industrial research.
Mm-hmm.
And I must confess, when I came there, he was established at MIT, but kind of floating. You know, at that point, he was attached to the Research Lab of Electronics, and I will not be able to think of the man who gave him a home there. Later we moved, when I was working with him, we moved over to the language department and the library. Bill Locke, who was a professor of languages and then director of the libraries, gave us a home in the library. And then Perry's work attracted the attention of Joe Becker at CIA,
mm-hmm.
and we had a contract with CIA that gave us a home in the, and I won't be able now to recall the name of the lab, but it was the area at MIT where classified research was being carried on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I was trying to straighten it out in my mind back in 45. Casey and some other folks, not Perry's name was not on it, did that article in Chemical and Engineering News.
Okay.
But there was also a note someplace I've seen that said Perry was a library fellow
at MIT
in 1945. But he wasn't one of those authors of that original article in Chemical Engineering News. But by
1950, by 1949, certainly, he was working with Bob Casey on the punch card book.
Okay, well, by 48, he was one of the two that went with, he and Dyson went to see Tom Watson at IBM about the problem of handling chemical information. So, someplace in between. He must have made a connection up with Casey then.
I would not have placed that in 1948 because I remember when that happened and I was already working with Perry.
Oh, really?
That doesn't mean that he didn't go there in effect twice, you know, but it seems to me. Now, it's been a long time, and it could be that I remember him telling me about that rather than. But I remember that an outcome of that visit with Tom Watson was that he turned us over to Pete Loon.
That's right.
Hans Peter Loon. That was definitely when I was working with Perry. Yeah.
Well, now, I know there's an article in Chemical and Engineering News that's maybe 49 or 50, I'll have to go back in my chronology, that talks about Perry and Dyson going and talking with Watson, and that the problem was assigned to Calhoun.
Yeah.
But can't remember the exact date.
Yeah. Well, I can remember going to the IBM homestead in Endicott, New York, with Perry, and I think Alan Kent was with us at that time, and Pete Loon, and we sat down and spent a very enjoyable weekend discussing information problems and information processing as opposed to data processing.
Yeah, and you don't remember what date that was?
No, but if you want to take a minute
I'll just change the tape here, in fact.